This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, February 22nd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, I got to tell you, you know, we have another snowstorm coming today. I'm going to be out there blowing snow again later today. But I walked out of my house today, and I just want to share with you what I heard.
Oh, is that the sound of spring, Buster?
You know, your predecessor, Josh Macri, would always talk about the birds. Like, he loved when I would do podcasts down in Florida because you could hear the birds. And I'm not, you know, someone who knows everything about birds, but there were birds in that mix right there that I don't hear till spring training. When I heard them, I was like, wow. It's around the corner. We're only a month away from spring.
Yeah, it's exciting. This is, I mean, for me, starting the podcast is the official start of spring. So,
okay,
snow be damned. But this is an encouraging sound here. You sent me a text message with this recording. I was like, what is this? Popped it in. Birds, delightful, Buster.
Well, I love the sound of birds. And as they say, I wish I knew. And maybe some of our listeners can chime in and tell me what birds I heard. But that one that has that. That is a springtime sound for sure. All right. Clayton Kershaw told reporters yesterday he has no intention of hanging up his spikes after the 2021 season. His quote, "I'm only 32. I feel like I have a few more years left in the tank. If you ask me right now, I really still love playing. I feel healthy right now, and I feel like the ball is coming out good. After this year, we'll figure things out." Here's more of Clayton Kershaw speaking with reporters.
Feel great. It's good to be back. You know, it's been fun to see the guys and hopefully get the position players here. I don't know when, tomorrow maybe, and get the full team together. And, you know, it's great. We really haven't had a chance to, like, celebrate it or anything together, you know, since no parade or anything like that. So maybe get to live it up for a little bit these next few days and then get ready to go for this season. With the team that we have coming in, the expectation is to win a World Series. And so we have to remember that it doesn't matter that we won last year, but, you know, at the same time, remember that our team is going to be has a chance to be really special again, and we can't take that for granted. You know, I said it before, but there's not many teams that have gone all in year after year like we have to try and bring home a World Series. So I don't take that for granted, and you know, that's our motivation for this year, not trying to squander that opportunity. And you know, I know for myself personally, you know, I do feel like there's some relief coming into the year, obviously, and having won one and, you know, maybe not having that added burden to win the first one in 32 years. But it doesn't change the fact that we want to win again and have a great chance of doing that.
Rockies outfielder Ian Desmond opted out of the 2021 season for the second straight year. Now, this is not necessarily something he's going to stick with all year. He indicated for now that's his decision. The Yankees and Brett Gardner agreed to a one-year, $4 million contract. Eduardo Rodriguez, who last year suffered from myocarditis, an inflammation of the heart linked to the coronavirus, is back in Red Sox camp, and he's ready to go. There is sad news about longtime pitcher and pitching coach Stan Williams. He passed away Saturday morning at the age of 84. Boy, was he someone who was really tough. He had a reputation around baseball as a pitching coach, especially of giving out hard love to his players and being absolutely blunt and honest. Kevin Mather is the CEO of the Seattle Mariners, and earlier this month he did a virtual event with a Rotary Club. It was on February 5th and was unbelievably blunt and, in my opinion, tone deaf. The Bellevue Breakfast Rotary Club released this 46-minute video on YouTube. It was deleted quickly after that because they realized how inflammatory some of his statements were. But you know what? They're clips that are living in infamy. Here he is talking about service time manipulation.
We made the decision when we invited the 60 players. We made the decision to invite 15 prospects. We, our top prospects were all in Tacoma for, you know, summer camp was 30 days, and then Tacoma was a 60-day practice exhibition game. We brought 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who never would have seen T-Mobile Park or Cheney Stadium if not for COVID. And so as devastating as 2020 was on player development and getting better, we took a risk and brought kids in, our high-end prospects, and really got to know them. They got high-end instruction in Tacoma. The risk was if our major league team had had a COVID outbreak or, you know, injuries, and we had to call people up from the taxi squad, we were a little short on players because there was no chance you were going to see these young players at T-Mobile Park. We weren't going to put them on the 40-man roster. We weren't going to start the service time clock. There were all kinds of reasons that if we would have had an injury problem or a COVID outbreak, you might have seen my big tummy out there in left field. You would not have seen our young players, our prospects, playing at T-Mobile Park.
Here he is talking about the high number of free agents that have been available this winter.
But we lost $2.9 billion last year. And we have taken the position that there are 180 free agents still out there on February 5th, unsigned. And sooner or later, these players are going to turn their hat over and come with hat in hand looking for a contract. We think Walker is one of them. James Paxton made $12.5 million last year, and his agent has told us that he's going to make more in 2021. Interestingly, we started a conversation with Paxton yesterday, and it is for substantially less.
This comment I felt like was completely inexcusable about Asashi Iwakuma and his need for a translator.
As far as Korea, Japan, Taiwan, those players are typically older. They don't come over as 16, 18-year-olds. They come over as 28, 30, 32-year-olds. And we typically – it frustrates me. For instance, we just rehired Iwakuma. Iwakuma was a pitcher for us for a number of years, wonderful human being. His English is terrible. He wanted to get back into the game. He wanted to – and he came to us, and we quite frankly want him as our Asian scout interpreter. What's going on in the Japanese league? He's coming to spring training. And I made the statement, I'm tired of paying his interpreter. Because when he was a player, you know, we pay Iwakuma X, but we also had to pay $75,000 a year to have an interpreter with him. His English suddenly got better. His English got better when we told him that. So,
and here he is talking about the English language skills of top prospect Rodriguez.
Julio Rodriguez has got a personality bigger than all of you combined. He is loud. His English is not tremendous, but him and Kelenic are very good friends. He's a year behind Kelenic. He will probably be here in everybody says 2021. He won't be here till 2022 or 2023. A fantastic kid. Really big on social media. He loves to get out in front. He loves the Mariners. And between him and Kelenic, we think we've got an outfield that will be as good as any in baseball.
Now, after this story broke last night and there was a huge reaction to it on social media, Kevin Mather issued an apology. He said, especially to our players and to our fans, there's no excuse for my behavior. I take full responsibility for my terrible lapse in judgment. My comments were my own. They do not reflect the views and strategy of the Mariners baseball leadership, who are responsible for decisions about the development and status of the players at all levels of the organization. I've been on the phone most of the day today apologizing to the many people I have insulted, hurt, or disappointed in speaking about at a recent online event. Now, before we get to Tim Kirkton and Britt Jaroli, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And the NFL never stops, and neither does ESPN's radio coverage with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, weekdays from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern. Join Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mehente every day on ESPN Radio and ESPN2 as they set the table for the day, and listen to the show wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkshen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkshen covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, I love the new intro that you have. You know? That's pretty cool. I didn't know that was coming.
Me neither. The old one ran for like 6 years. It was probably time to do that. Now you should go get a new picture of me because I've gotten a lot older in the last 6 years.
Yeah, the Twitter picture that I have, I think, is from 2003, if I remember correctly. And a couple people on Twitter have said maybe I should update. When is yours from?
I just went to someone who knows how to do this, and they showed me how to update my picture on several different places because it looked absurd. It looked like my thumbprint. It looked like from I was 19 years old or something, but now all full gray hair in there and a slightly better picture, which is always relative, by the way.
By the way, we had Dr. Anthony Fauci on the podcast on Friday, and one of my list of questions to ask him was, does he ever have people who say, you know, you look a lot like Tim Kirkshen, but we kind of ran out of time.
Thank goodness for that. I told you that Aaron Boone told me, are you related to Dr. Fauci? You look just like him. To which I had to say very unfairly, he's 80 years old. I'm 64. I look like Dr. Fauci. Are you kidding me? It was all a joke. I hope I look that good when I'm 80. I hope I look that good when I'm 70.
All right. So yesterday, video emerged from Kevin Mather, the CEO of the Seattle Mariners, speaking with a Rotary Club. And Tim, just in listening to that sound this morning, I was like, wow, I don't know how he survives this. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know how he survives it either. It was really disappointing and discouraging to hear anyone speak that way. But he's the president of the team. He is the spokesman of the team. And to challenge Kyle Seager and call him overpaid when everyone in the game knows Kyle Seager is one of the real good guys who shows up every day prepared and ready to go, to go into, to talk about a Japanese player who needs an interpreter, now a coach who needs an interpreter. It's his second language. Are you kidding me? $75,000? We're going to complain about that when every club, it's mandatory that those who need an interpreter get one. And then to challenge a young, up-and-coming player, Julio Rodriguez, about his English, when indeed it is his second language. Come on, we got to do way better than that anyway. And when you're the club president, you have to do way, way better than that.
Yeah, he had a wide range of statements that went from offensive to really stupid if you're in that job. First off, just the one that was most shocking to me was Sasashi Iwakuma. You made reference to that where he, talked about how they told him that they didn't want to pay for an interpreter for him as he rejoined the organization. And then he seemed to insinuate by saying, and then his English all of a sudden got a lot better, like he was faking it the whole time. Tim?
Well, again, that was maybe the most troublesome part of all that we read about this, because it's just unacceptable behavior. Plus, he would come a pitch for the team for quite a while. He was a solid member of their club. And then to just dismiss all of that and question why he needs an interpreter, I just shook my head this morning. Again, in this day and age, in any day and age, no club president, no president of any company should be speaking like that.
Yeah, Corey Brock of The Athletic sent out a story, I think it was yesterday or this morning, detailing all of Rodriguez's efforts to learn English and insisting on doing interviews in English. And I always go back to my last class at Vanderbilt. I got a D plus in Spanish, and, you know, and through the years when I had older players, and let's face it, they're mostly white old players, would say, hey, how come that guy hasn't learned English? I'd look at him and say, well, how's your Spanish? How's your effort to learn Spanish? Because my effort to learn Spanish when I was in college was pretty bad, Tim.
Buster, I took 7 years of French. As I've told you, worst mistake I ever made. 33% of our players speak Spanish. And now that Real Cormier is retired, I don't have anyone to speak French to. However, if there was a chance after my 7 years of studying French that I had to go to France and cover or do anything, I would be lost. And to challenge someone on his second language when Julio Rodriguez's English apparently is not bad at all. In fact, it's pretty good. I just don't understand the point of saying something like that.
And I'm sure that there were people in the commissioner's office just shaking their head when they heard him talk out loud about service time manipulation. And this is one of those topics, Tim, where, look, I've had 100,000 conversations with people at the team level, at other levels, about service time manipulation. Everybody talks about it off the record, and everybody knows that it's real. But it's pretty unusual when you have a high-ranking baseball executive talk about it in a Zoom call with team patrons and effectively acknowledge that, yeah, we'd never call up our best prospects because we don't want to start their service time clock. So I don't think what he said was actually shocking to anybody. That he said it out loud is what's going to shock people.
And Buster, let's not forget the underlying fact here. The Mariners haven't been in the playoffs in 20 years.
Yeah.
They're not going this year either. You would think now would be the time to pump up your fans, talk about your young players, your coaching staff, your veteran third baseman in a positive light, not a negative light.
And he talked about the high number of free agents out in the market. And again, none of this is surprising. You heard from agents back in November. Yeah, there are going to be a lot of teams. They're going to slow play this. Wait till late January, early February. Wait for players to get desperate so that the prices go down. And you have a CEO talking about that dynamic out loud.
Yeah, I just I don't get any of this. And I'm not sure how he's going to survive this, because this is not the first violation he's had within the organization. So as Larry Stone, our pal, wrote this morning, you know, three strikes and you're out. And that seems to be where we are right now.
Yesterday, Clayton Kershaw spoke with reporters for the first time since getting back to Dodgers camp. And Tim, it surprised me how aggressively he talked about pitching beyond the 2021 season. He turns 33 next month, but he's had a lot of physical problems in recent years. And I've always thought of Clayton as being someone who, when his baseball career is over, he'll find plenty to do, right? Between his kids and his other interests, all the charitable endeavors that he and Ellen have. I wrote a piece back in November after talking with a lot of folks who know him in the Dodgers organization, and sort of raised the question of, you know what, you know, maybe winning a championship is a good way for Kershaw to go out, like Sandy Koufax, because he does have all these other interests, and making money in baseball is not his be all end all. But it certainly sounded yesterday, and listening to him, that he intends to pitch for a while, that he loves pitching and he loves what the Dodgers organization is.
Right, and I agree about the looking forward. He has so much more to do than baseball, which is what makes him, by the way, such a great baseball player, is he's able to compartmentalize what he's doing out there. But as you know, Buster, he had a really good year last year. If it wasn't such an exceptional year for Cy Young candidates in the National League, he would have been right there. He had a 2.16 ERA and 8 walks and 62 strikeouts in 58 and a third. And, of course, he was brilliant in the World Series when it mattered the most. And, yes, he's had some physical issues, but he has learned in recent years how to pitch without his very, very best stuff, even though his stuff is still exceptional. And he's learned how to win and to get people out at 92 instead of 97. That's a hard thing to do. I think he's found another way to win, and he loves to compete. Buster, you've seen him running wind sprints at noon for a 7 o'clock game. I mean, he's the first guy out there always. I'm not sure he's able to give that up as easily as some people think. I think he'll pitch for several more years.
Now, I remember when Andrew Friedman took over baseball operations, and there were things that they were putting in place that I don't think Clayton was necessarily wild about. For example, you remember when they removed AJ Ellis as his personal catcher. I think Clayton is someone who's like, just give me the ball and get out of the way and I'm going to compete. But I suspect that as time has gone on and he's gotten to understand what Andrew's going for, that he probably is starting to reach a place where, you know what, this is a perfect place for me to pitch because this organization will always build enough depth where if he's got a nagging injury, if maybe he's a little worn down over the course of his season, they can fill in the gaps. You know, it's been now 6 years since he's made 30 starts in a season. And I think certainly this year you would expect that he's not going to make 30 starts again because they've got Trevor Bauer and they have Walker Buehler and they have Arias and they have all these guys, David Price, they have all these guys, Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin. They don't need Clayton Kershaw to make 35 starts in a way that they used to in the past. And I think for Kershaw at this stage in his career, that's a great thing.
Of course it is. As you mentioned, they have 7 major league starters, Buster. In fact, you can make a case in the National League they have the best 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 starters in the league. That's how good they are. And let's face it, with today's day and age, if you make 25 starts, you're not a wimpy guy. You're doing great. If you make 30, you're a horse. You know, that's just the way it works these days. So why not take a start off here and there? Why not go on 6 days rest instead of 5 or 4? Whatever it takes, he should do that because he realizes he can lengthen his career, but more important, he can stay healthy. And when he's healthy, he's still really good.
During the time I've covered baseball, there are a handful of players where you just assume, you know what, the two sides will work it out in terms of contract. Kershaw is a free agent after this year. And as we sit here today, I don't know what his salary is going to be for next year, but I think they'll work it out. I think the Dodgers organization understand that he's the heir apparent to, you know, Sandy Koufax is the guy who's thrown out first pitches for many, many years to come. To me, he's going to wind up, he certainly should have a chance to be unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame. And if you're Clayton Kershaw, yeah, you know, in theory, for example, you could think about pitching for the Texas Rangers, closer to his home in the Dallas area. But at this stage in his career, the most important thing for him is going to have the opportunity to win championships. So I feel like it's – I don't know what the numbers are going to be, but I feel like it's a done deal that he'll re-sign there.
Yeah, first off, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer and maybe unanimous because what is there not to like there? And when the time comes for him to say, I want to spend more time with my family, he's just going to retire to do that because he knows that even if you live in Dallas and play for the Rangers, you're away from home all the time when you're a major league player. So I fully expect him to finish his career with the Dodgers. This reminds me a little bit different level of Ripken and Wynn and Yadier Molina. I mean, you look at Clayton Kershaw, and he just will not look right in any other uniform.
Yeah, at the end of Cal's career, I don't think the relationship between he and the Orioles was necessarily that great, but I think both sides understood that's where he needed to be, and so they would work it out whenever his contract would be up. Speaking of the National League West, a phrase I've heard a lot of in the last 4 or 5 days from officials with other teams is sustainability when it comes to the San Diego Padres. You know, they gave that $300 million deal to Manny Machado, $144 million invested in Eric Hosmer, and now one of the biggest contracts in baseball history, $340 million to Fernando Tatis Jr. And a lot of the comparisons that I've heard from folks around baseball in recent days is to that of Mike Ilitch, you know, the late great owner of the Detroit Tigers, who in his last decade of life basically seemingly decided, I don't care what it costs. I don't care if it fits our marketplace. I just want this team to win, and I want to put as many good players on this team as possible. And for about a decade, the Tigers are wildly entertaining, you know, having from Justin Verlander and giving him a huge contract, Maglio Ordonez and Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera with that contract, Tim, which runs through 2025. I couldn't believe it when I looked that up the other day, because Mike Ilitch was like, you know what? it's my money and I'm going to spend it the way that I want. I want my baseball team to win. And I kind of wonder if that's what's going on with Peter Seidler, because the contracts individually don't make sense for the Padres, you know, as a small market, mid-market team. But I would say this, and I've heard from folks with other teams, they wonder if Machado and Tatis Jr. actually finished their careers with the Padres. But if you're a Padres fan, you don't care about that. You're just excited to have an owner who's willing to spend.
Right. Look, Buster, we tear in owners who are not willing to spend. It just seems hypocritical to tear in owners who are willing to spend. And Mike Ilitch was trying to win for the fans and for his organization and for Detroit. I know Dave Dombrowski told me once that he told Mr. Ilitch, look, we can't afford Prince Fielder. And Mr. Ilitch said, I want to win. Let's go get him. Even though his GM said, I'd love to have him, but we can't afford him. And they went and got him anyway. They didn't win a World Series with him, but they tried. And that's what the Padres are trying to do, Buster. They've never won the World Series before. They've got people excited again in San Diego. I have a cousin who lives there, and she says, finally, they've done something to make me so happy. That's great. And yes, it's going to cause some issues, because in a few years, Machado and Tatis are going to be making like $65 million together. How are they going to afford the rest of the team? How are they going to sign Mike Clevenger long-term, Mackenzie Gore, some of these other good young players? These are huge questions. But to trash the Padres for trying too hard to win, I'm just not going there.
No, and there have been owners in the past in the San Diego history, and I know I covered the Padres for 3 years, from 1992 to 1994. Look, Ray Kroc, at one point, he spent aggressively at the beginning of free agency, and then he backed off. And Tom Werner, they went out with Joe McElvain as the general manager. They acquired Gary Sheffield. They acquired Fred McGriff. And then they got worried about the cost, and they tore down the franchise. John Moores didn't keep all the players that they put together. They cut back on their spending. That's been the history of the franchise. So I think if you're a Padres fan, you're just excited that you're going to have a chance to go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers. And there's no question that that's going to be the rivalry that we're going to watch most this year. Before we go, give me 90 seconds on what you see in the National League East. We start the National League East previews on the podcast tomorrow.
Yeah, it's the best division in baseball. The Braves are really good. And some of the things, if Mike Soroka comes back totally healthy, they're going to be really, really good. The Nationals are demonstrably better. They had four holes to fill. They filled them all, including in their rotation and in their bullpen. They can pitch with almost anybody now. The Mets are significantly better with Francisco Lindor and the depth they've added to their starting pitching, not to mention a catcher. The Phillies are better just because they got JT Realmuto back, which was an obvious thing they had to do. And they've added some pieces, three or four of them in the bullpen, which also had to be done. The Marlins made the playoffs last year. No one wants any part of those first three guys in the rotation. They should have added some offense. They're two hitters short. So I'm not saying they're going to finish last, but a playoff team from last year, they might be a last place team in that division with three starting pitchers that no one wants to see. That speaks to the strength of the National League East.
Well, and I really do hope that at some point the Player Association, Major League Baseball, can work out expanded playoffs, because, boy, that would make the jockeying in the National League East, the National League West, even more interesting. All right, Tim, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Rich Rowley covers baseball for The Athletic, and her recent pieces on sexual harassment have resonated within the sport. Britt, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Buster.
All right, so after the Jared Porter story broke, you wrote about your own experience, about having a player invite you to his room for what you thought was a story until you got there. I'm sorry you went through that. What was the response that you got after that piece came out?
It was overwhelming, to be honest with you. I think it kind of opened a vein. The Jared Porter story certainly opened a vein, and people for the first time are willing to listen and make changes. And I think that's important as well. I was blown away with how many people in baseball from way up high to way down low that I heard from, players, coaches, front office staff, other media members. And I do think it's important to share these experiences, but then to also kind of look forward as to, okay, this happened. It was terrible. How do we make sure it doesn't happen again? How do we not repeat these same mistakes, move forward as a sport and move forward as a society? I think baseball, like every other sport, is also a microcosm of what's going on in our world right now too.
Yeah. When I read the Jared Porter story, before your piece came out, before a conversation I had with Jessica Mendoza, my initial thought was, this is like the smallest tip of the iceberg, and there's going to be a lot of other similar stories that come spilling out. Kind of like the Harvey Weinstein stories really seemed to break a dam. And then we began to hear a lot about, CEOs of various companies, about people, males who'd been in power in various places. Can you, without being specific, because I know some of the people who reach out to you probably, you're going to protect their privacy. Can you describe some of the response that you got?
Yeah, I got a lot of Me Too responses, a lot of women from all different, teams and organizations and places that were like, thank you for saying something because this happened to me, or I dealt with this, or this is still going on. 10, 20 years ago, I was in sports or in the media, and this was still happening. So a lot of it was from women, not particularly surprised, which tells you everything you need to know. A lot of men, I think, were a little more surprised, disappointed that this kind of stuff is still going on. So again, I was kind of blown away with all that. And you're right, it does open a vein, because my inbox was probably, I would say, 300 or 400 deep in terms of messages with people who had tips or wanted to share their story. And that directly led to The Athletic's piece on Mickey Callaway. And that directly led to, the piece on Ryan Ellis. So I think you are starting to see that ripple effect, and you are starting to at least let people know that this is not going to be tolerated, and this isn't an isolated case reported by any means.
Yeah, I was just going to make reference to that. The story about Mickey Callaway, who was essentially suspended from his job with the Angels, that we're still waiting for final resolution on that. Ryan Ellis, I was just amazed that was something, his harassment was alleged internally with the Mets organization 3 years ago, and he was only recently let go. So it does feel like that the industry is changing how they deal with these things.
They are, to some extent. What upset me the most, Buster, about the Ellis thing was you know, not that they let him go because that was the right move, was that 3 years ago, three women coming forward was not enough. You know, 2018, we're not talking about 10, 15 years ago. And also they released him or you know, fired him in a way that nobody would have known about it otherwise. He could have latched onto another team, another organization. So I think the accountability piece from teams is the missing piece we need going forward. I would have loved to have teams step forward and say, you know, we didn't know it was this bad, but we knew something, right? We didn't know that Nikki Callaway was this bad, but we knew something. That's what I would like to see moving forward with a guy like Ryan Ellis. He could have had another job in another organization. Three women in 2018 had complaints. Many more women reached out after that story. These guys are everywhere in the game still. They're in all different organizations. And I'm just wondering why there hasn't been kind of a rash of dismissals. It almost seems like teams are still waiting to get caught to some extent.
Which is pretty discouraging, you know, especially after the reaction after the initial Jared Porter story. Would you agree with me that there's going to be a ton more of these stories that are going to come out?
Yeah, I think so. I think teams are rightly going to look inward and say, okay, what are we doing in our vetting process? Like, how did we miss this? So I do think that, like you said, this is the tip of the iceberg. This is something that I think, you know, a lot of guys in baseball who know they're guilty of this are kind of watching their phones, making sure that they don't get any phone calls about this, you know, because it's a reckoning. The sport wasn't ready for this 5-10 years ago, but I think that it's ready for it now.
My conversation with Jessica Mendoza the day after the Porter story broke, we talked about a need in baseball for a place to go with this type of information. I think the most heartbreaking story about the Jared Porter story, he had the part of the Jared Porter story is he had this young reporter who wasn't sure who to talk to about what happened and about these text messages she was getting from Jared Porter. And I, you know, my conversation with Jess, I was like, that person has to be crystal clear. And the name that we both used like reflexively was someone like Gene Afterman of the New York Yankees, you know, who's an absolute, who's such a tremendous advocate. If baseball identifies someone like that in a position, and it's well known that if you have something like this, this is where you're going to go. First off, what's your sense of where baseball is in trying to develop something like that?
Well, they are taking it seriously, Buster, which I think is step one. Like you said, that pipeline, you know, they're going to have like a external hotline now, an anonymous external hotline, which I think is important. That first off, it doesn't directly go up the chain to MLB. Second off, that you don't have to give your name if you don't want to. So I can call that hotline, know I'm protected, and know the person on the other line doesn't work for MLB. They're not concerned with how is this going to look for Team X, right? I think that's the problem we run into here when you talk about like the Ryan Ellis situation. That the Mets were also obviously concerned about their employee, Ryan Ellis, as much as they were concerned about the women. So to me, having that external hotline is going to be very important. Now they're going to have mandatory training for front office members. Every team is going to have sexual harassment training. They're going to put stuff right where they put the domestic violence stuff in every clubhouse. I think guys are going to become more aware of it, which is obviously step one, but the biggest step here remains to be, you know, seen. Are they going to continue to hire these guys? Are they going to do a better job vetting and getting background on these guys? Because calling up a bunch of buddies in baseball to ask about another buddy in baseball is never going to unearth anything, right? You surround yourself with like-minded people. You're never going to have a guy that's like, oh, you know what? I heard this. You need to be speaking to a diverse group of people. You need to be digging in on guys you're going to have in your organization, especially in these Jared Porter, Mickey Callaway roles. You're talking about two huge front-facing public faces of the organization. So I think that's what remains to be seen. Is baseball going to continue to hire from this same group? Are we going to actually stand up and say, this isn't right, these guys aren't right, we need to pick a different candidate? That, to me, when that happens, is going to kind of signify that we are in the next phase of change, that people are actually being vetted. People that have this background, that have these whispers, are maybe not getting these jobs because nobody deserves to get these jobs, right? Like, these are hard jobs. There's 30 GMs in baseball. There's 30 managers in baseball. I would like to see them carefully vetted. I would like to see more than just calling a couple friends in baseball about these guys. I think that's what needs to happen.
So in the fall, I had a conversation about a parallel, you know, situation in sort of a parallel plane with an African-American reporter who told me about things that were said to her, really awful things in a clubhouse. And it wasn't only the shock of having things said to her, but also, you know, many years later, she's still coping with dealing with the whole question of, you know, why is this put on me? Because at that moment that that happened, she was like, well, I could reach out to this person in the organization, and then that person might wind up, yeah, it's possible that person might wind up getting fired for this. But she hated all of it being put on her shoulders. That's what happened with you. And I said, Seth, I'm sorry you went through it. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, that was, to be honest with you, to be totally frank, I was not prepared for that at all. I was not prepared for that column to come out and to make this huge issue about myself and my personal experiences. You know, I buried that hotel incident for 7 years and never spoke about it. So I was good. You know, I thought I was recovered from it. And it was almost like ripping back open a wound, right? You're telling everyone about this personal, traumatic, terrible experience that happened to you. And now, you know, it becomes something that people, you know, want to talk about again. They want to understand why it happened. And I understand that, but I was not prepared. And I'm certain the reporter with Jared Porter was not prepared for the outrage, for how many people were affected and stepped forward because of this. So I totally understand on some level, you know, I will never understand what it's like to be Black, but I do understand the whole, this is now on me now. And I think that's where we have to move past. This isn't on women to fix. Like I said, with the vetting, this is on the guys who are making these hires, the organizations, to do the hard thing, to get rid of the people that are saying these things. I mean, we have a great example in terms of what's happening in Seattle right now. I mean, that is a situation where 10 years ago, two women came forward. There was a case settled outside of court. They allowed him to stay in the organization. Now more issues are arising. And I don't feel bad for them because they didn't do the right thing the first time around. I mean, why has Mickey Callaway not been fired yet? Because the Angels are a little concerned with, you know, the wrongful termination suit or things like that. I still think to some extent teams are really worried about covering themselves first and doing the right thing second. And I hope we get to a place where they realize how important it is to do the right thing, not just the thing that makes the team look the best.
Yeah. And as you were saying that, I was thinking of when Donald Sterling and his actions in the NBA became so outrageous that Adam Silver basically just said, I'm not going to worry about the legality of all this. This is not going to continue. And he essentially kicked him out of the sport. And it seems like baseball needs to get to that point.
Absolutely. They need to get to the zero tolerance policy. And it's like that with a lot of things, I think, with a lot of sports, with a lot of companies that are, you know, trying to adapt, and it's going a little slower than, you know, you or I or most people would like. So I agree. I would love to see MLB step in and say, this is enough. This guy need to go. The sport needs to be cleaned up. I hope that's where we go, because if not, Buster, then I question, what are we really doing here besides putting on a brave face and saying, well, we have this one hotline, and then nobody actually treats it as something that could, you know, springboard forward. So I hope these are actual solutions. But most importantly, I hope the intent beyond these solutions is genuine and is really committed to making change, because it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be overnight, but it's something this sport badly needs to move forward.
Britt, thanks for doing this. Thanks for your reporting.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Buster. I appreciate it.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for this fine Monday. First up, we've got Trevor Dunning at TL Dunning. He writes in, I can see the runner on second and extra innings rule sticking around, but doesn't the 7-inning doubleheader rule mess too much with stats in non-COVID seasons? If it doesn't, does this open the door for other changes like a shorter season?
You know, Trevor, I think the stats are officially messed with.
Yeah.
I thought about too, you know, when baseball started, of course, you were allowed to throw a spitball. They used one ball for a lot of the game, or two or three balls for the entire game. And the offensive numbers were down. And then there was a time after Babe Ruth, became a star in baseball, where there were a lot of home runs and there were very few strikeouts. And then the pitching numbers were amazing through 1969, and then they lowered the mound, and everything changed after that. And I'm telling you, I absolutely believe this, is that sometime in the years that I'm covering baseball, the next 10, 15 years, there's going to be a reduction of baseball from 9 to 7 innings. So I just don't think we're going to have apples to apples when we're talking about statistics in baseball.
That is a hot take, Buster. All right. That'll be the headline for this episode. Next there up, go. We've got Frank at Cinegrades 2. He writes in, Buster, my brother and I were watching a bit of the 1995 ALDS Game 5 between the Yankees and Mariners this weekend. The King Dome was roaring. What was the loudest ballpark you've ever heard? Good question.
Yeah, and I was not at that game in person, but I remember covering loud games in the King Dome, and that was crazy because everything was contained. I think outdoor ballparks, I remember the Yankee Stadium in the first years of the new Yankee Stadium, it was absolutely dead. But then they played the Astros in the 2017 playoffs, and that was insane how loud that place got. Old Yankee Stadium, the same way, that was super loud. And in Houston, you know, during the postseason in 2017, it got incredibly loud. You know, that, of course, with the roof closed.
Shout out to the Delman Young double at Camden Yards in the ALDS.
There you go.
Let's go to our final tweet for today. Sanzier at Sanzier writes in, will Kevin Mather be put on leave following his recent comments? Hard to see a top prospect sign an early extension or any 22 free agent wanting to go there if he is running the Mariners. Any reactions from other clubs, players, etc.?
Yeah, and Sanzier, just to be clear, if you put a huge contract like a Tatis Jr. contract in front of a Jared Kelenic, he would sign. Like, in the end, you know, we always hear about players, well, I wouldn't go there because of X, Y, and Z. I think for the most part, if there's a big contract, the players will stay. I said at the top when we started the conversation about what he said, I don't know how he survives.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets today. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And just a side note here, if anything sounds funky today, it's because we got a new setup. We're working through the kinks. It's no big deal. It'll be ironed out in the wash.
That new soundboard. I think it sounds good on my end.
Yeah, the recording on my end sounds a little funky. We'll see how it sounds in post, and we'll make some tweets. It's a very cool setup. I'm very excited. I got all the sounds queued up pretty easily. Got the bat nice. Crack, yeah. So, yeah, should be good. I'm excited for it.
And the sound of the birds at the top of the show that I taped in my house this morning, which is pretty cool. That's it for today. My thanks to Britt, to Tim, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight Podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.